Wait, is that the theme song for Get Lit?
It's another time, another book club.
Woot woot. It still has that new show smell, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is Get Lit. This is your monthly Katie and Kay Happy Hour book show with Erin Go Book. Woo! And myself, I'm April. You might know me from Friday Mornings on the Wild Rumpus. But we are here to discuss our latest book club book, and that is
Black Klansman, Race, Hate, and the Undercover Investigation of a Lifetime by Mr. Ron Stallworth.
It was an amazing book. What can I say? I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I did too.
I think my first thought on it was, now we do know that it was made into a movie and it's probably going to win a bunch of awards if it hasn't already. But as a book, and it was written by it's basically a memoir.
Yeah, yeah. Ron Stallworth wrote it. And I'm sure he worked with editors, but it is his story.
So I want to say that the first thing that struck me is how such a sensitive subject, and we'll get into that subject matter, could be told in such a with such humor.
Yeah.
And lightheartedness.
I agree, because it could have been very intense in a negative way.
And I want to say, I just want to sit down and have a beer with him and talk to him, because the way he told the story was so incredible. And we will be talking about drinks later, right?
Absolutely. It is a book book club happy hour show. Book club meaning that you drink anyway, and happy hour, you definitely need to have a drink in your hand or a cocktail.
We did explain that to somebody recently that they said, well, I don't get the book club drinking thing. And it's like, well, you've never been in a book club then.
And right. Now, we normally try to read the books, for sure, but drinking is a very crucial, important part of any good book club.
And you know what? We are so excited to announce that we do have an underwriter.
Woo-hoo!
Here for our Get Lit. And support for Get Lit on KD&K comes from Carbondale Beer Works, located next to the post office, serving house brewed beers, guest microbrews, and local seasonal food. Carbondale Beer Works offers Celtic music with the Furleys tomorrow night starting at 7:30. More info at carbondalebeerworks.com. And we do want to thank them for being our underwriter
supporter.
And supporting
Thanks, Beer Works.
Us. Yay. So now back to the book. Do you want to throw the premise out there?
So let's see. So the story takes place in 1979 in our very own Colorado Springs. So that was one of the reasons we were interested in reading it. And then also February is Black History Month. So we wanted to support that as well. As April was saying, the book did become a major motion picture in 2019, and it was directed by Spike Lee and produced by Jordan Peele, which I did not know that Jordan Peele was involved in that until I looked that up online. And a funny thing I have to mention about the film really quick before we start talking about the book is after I read the book, I like to research and look up different things, you know, what different people said about the book or movie or whatever. And there was an interview with Spike Lee and Ron Stallworth, and Ron Stallworth said that David Duke actually called him when they were producing the film, and David Duke was worried about looking like a fool and how they were going to represent him. Ron's like, well, yeah, David, you're going to look like a fool, because it was pretty foolish how you bought into all of this.
He's like,
I thought that was awesome.
Long time no hear.
Right.
Thanks for giving me a call. And So real quick, I would like to read the author's note here.
Yeah, please.
It's the preface of the book. And it says, if one black man, aided by a bevy of good, decent, dedicated, open, and liberal-minded whites and Jews, can succeed in prevailing over a group of white racists by making them look like the ignorant fools they truly are, then imagine what a nation of like-minded individuals can accomplish. So basically right there, I just read the first line of that, but that there you go. That's what he says. And like I said, the book is a true story, and it's amazing. We want to say, if you've read the book and you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call at 963-2976. That's 963-2976. We'll get you on the air and you can talk Black Klansman with us.
Or even if you haven't read the book but you saw the film, please give us a call. We'd like to talk to you about that too. One thing I found, so Ron was the first black police officer and detective on the Colorado Springs Police Force, which was pretty amazing. He was extremely young. He started off in life wanting to be a PE teacher, go figure. And then he joined the police department in Colorado Springs at the age of 22 in 1972 and was initially signed to work in the ID and Records Bureau, where he was super bored and hated it. And he quickly developed an interest in undercover police work. And after 10 months of being a patrol officer, he was offered an undercover assignment. And it kind of went from there, which was pretty amazing. He did some pretty fantastic work.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. His first undercover assignment, he had been kind of pestering to become an undercover.
Right.
He called it a narc.
Every time, yeah, right. And every time I don't remember the officer's name, but every time he saw that officer, he'd be like, hey, you got any room on your team? I'm ready.
And so they finally tapped him because there was going to be a rally with Stokely Carmichael, who later became known as Kwame Ture, and he was a leader in the black,
I just had that he was a socialist organizer in the civil rights movement.
Yes,
he was a very
rights,
prominent
yes.
figure.
So they needed somebody. He was going to be coming to Colorado Springs for a talk, and they wanted to get somebody in there undercover, so they only had one black officer, so Stallworth was picked. That was it. And it was very interesting. I thought one of the things, too, I'm a statistics person. I might have been scribbling my notes, about an hour and a half ago on some tear-out pages here.
But you know your stats.
But I do like statistics. And I was laughing because I said I want to take a picture of my notes as compared to Erin Go Books notes that were typed up neatly on her computer and printed out, about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I have, font sizes and things bold and all kinds of details.
Colorado Springs at the time of this was a town of 250,000. And there were 250 officers, and he was the only black officer.
Yeah, pretty special at that time that he got in. And soon after, he starts, getting involved. What happened is he saw an ad. People say, how did he get involved with the KKK? He actually saw an ad in a newspaper in Sea Springs saying, I think the ad is in the book if you have it in there somewhere,
yeah.
April. I think in one of the picture pages. But yeah, there's this ad saying, are you interested in these types of values and becoming a part of our association? So he sends off a letter, and thus begins the journey of him being the first, probably and only, black member of the KKK.
And in the book, they have a couple of pictures. I did not see the ad, but yeah, I guess it was an ad right there in the paper saying, interested in the Klan, give us a call.
How bizarre is that? Can you imagine seeing that in the paper today? Well, freakishly, never know.
Well, we probably will move back around to that at some point, but even at that time, one of the reactions he got from a lot of the officers in the this is a prank, there's no way that somebody's actually putting this out there,
right.
And so when he responded, I think he initially wrote a letter, and wasn't that it? He wrote a letter, and
I believe so, like an inquiry letter,
and he, even not even thinking about it, gave his real name.
Right.
And gave the phone number there at the police station, but they did use this phone for undercover work and such. But he gave his real name because he really didn't think that it wasn't maybe just a prank.
It would come to fruition,
and he would just see what's going on there. And I did hear an interview with him that he still has that card, his membership card.
Gosh, I hope so.
Yeah, with his name on it. But he had later on, he actually acts as a bodyguard for David Duke.
Yes, yes.
And snaps a photo, a Polaroid of him.
He
kind of
tricks him into snapping this photo.
Yes.
And Ron puts his arm around David Duke, which was not okay with David Duke.
He was not happy with that. But that he did lose that picture, sadly.
I know. When I read that, I was like, dang it, what a photo. That would be worth so much. That's so amazing.
Oh, but he does. He says he carries, he has that, his membership card for the Ku Klux Klan. So anyway, he answers this ad for, people interested in the Klan, give us a call, or, and so he gets a call back, and he answers the phone and is caught a little bit off guard when a gentleman calls and says, yeah, I'm returning your phone call with some, you're interested in the KKK, tell us about yourself.
And so, yep, he chats him up, and they have a meeting place, and Ron is smart enough to say, I better get one of my fellow white officers to go to the meeting and represent me.
Yeah, so he taps one of the undercover cops, Chuck I don't remember the last name, but his name's Chuck. And he's going to be, so they're going to operate as one person. Chuck's going to be the face of Ron Stallworth. And then
Ron's the brains.
Ron's the brains and the voice that talks to him on the phone. And I know one of the things in the book that it mentioned was, I think it was their captain or something said, well, he's going to know he's talking to a black person because you're going to sound black. And he asked him, well, what exactly does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And gave him a little explanation of what he thought a black person sounded like. And that wasn't how Ron Stallworth speaks.
Well, that was the same conversation that Ron had with David Duke.
Yeah.
Because David Duke was just adamant that he was talking to a white person. He would very much be able to tell if he was talking to a black person because of, you know, the dialect they have or how they say certain words. And, you know, obviously Ron is just dying, cracking up in his office because clearly he's just pulling the wool right over his eyes. It's awesome.
Yeah. So he starts. So Chuck, as Ron Stallworth, starts meeting with these KKK members there in Colorado Springs. And, you know, they like him so much, they're making him an organizer and, you know, really tapping him to, you know, further their cause, as you might want to say. And then they find out that guess who's coming to town?
David Duke.
David Duke himself is going to come.
He's going to have a little rally.
Yeah. Yeah. So then things got, I mean, that must be pretty intense when you.
I can't imagine. That would scare me being one of the community members. And I know that there were community members in Colorado Springs. I can't remember some of the specific groups now, but they were a protest against him coming. And so they were, I think the city was actually worried about his safety.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There were lots of
death threats and things.
Threats and things. So that's when they decided, which, you know, have to say that they, whoever made this decision had to have been thinking a little tongue in cheek. But but they did assign Ron Stallworth, the black officer, to be the one and only bodyguard for David Duke when he came to town.
Now, one thing that makes me think about is they talk about a firefighter who was a part of the KKK. And there was a conversation with him about how he could do his job. And it was very interesting because even though he was a white supremacist, he thought of his job as the highest degree. And it didn't matter who you were, what you looked like, he would save you from a fire and perform his job. And Ron kind of equated that to himself when he is David Duke's bodyguard, that even though this is a man who hates him and would rather see him dead, it is still Ron's job to protect him. And he does that very well.
Yeah, you know, I have a personal experience with that, and I feel like I told this story once on Katie and Kay, but back in the day, I was working as at a hotel with banquets, and, you know, we often did weekend-long events where people came in on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and stayed in the hotel and had all this stuff, and it was for a group of Holocaust deniers.
Wow.
And I went to work the Friday night and I came home and said, I don't want to go back to work this weekend. I don't want to work for these people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my sister said to me, if you want to have your freedom of speech, it has to go.
They do too.
It has to go all directions.
Yep.
And I, you know, it took a lot for me, but I thought, okay, I do believe so much in my freedom of speech that I am going to go back there. I might not be the nicest all weekend as I normally might be, but some of the things that I saw, they actually had photo albums on their tables that they were showing each other of Klan events and white robed, you know, them in their white robes and such. I had never in my life growing up in Southern California seen something like that.
Yeah, I have to say, I am not aware of any. I don't think that I know any Klansmen, or at least if they are, I have no idea. My close friends, I would certainly hope not. But isn't that bizarre? It's people you in society, and usually they're very upstanding citizens because the KKK claims to be a nonviolent organization, even though we know that's a big joke. But yeah, having this sort of like upstanding, good family people, religious, and you're like, whoa, and you're having a book with your hoods on? My gosh.
Yeah, you have these set out like it's, you know, a normal thing. And I mean, definitely not ashamed of it. I mean, I can't remember what the name of the group was, but as I said, they were Holocaust deniers. And that was, you know, they had books there. And they were the same group that offered $1 million if somebody could prove that it happened, and they ended up paying it out to somebody. So that is interesting.
Yeah,
so.
I'm all about free speech, but that kind of stuff does break my heart. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah, it's hard, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to read one of the passages I had. It was at the end of the book. It was from chapter 11 called Up in Smoke. And I thought it was important because as you're reading through the story and if you see the film, you're like, okay, so he infiltrated the KKK, but what really did he do? You know, what accomplishments did he have? And I just wanted to sum it up in a really nice paragraph from the book. I have often been asked, what did you really accomplish over the course of this investigation without arresting any Klan members or seizing any illegal contraband? Or what would you be most proud of where this investigation effort was concealed? My answer was always in this fashion. As a result of our combined effort, no parent of a black or other minority child, or any child for that matter, had to explain why an 18-foot cross was seen burning at this or that location, especially those individuals from the South who perhaps as children had experienced the terrorist act of a Klan burning cross. No child in the city limits of Colorado Springs ever had to experience firsthand the fear brought on by this act of terror. We prevented them from having such an incident burned into their consciousness, and many of their parents might have been imprinted, that many of their parents might have had imprinted as children. I knew firsthand from direct hearings via my undercover phone conversations with Ken when and where those acts of terror were being planned, and we in the police department were able to put a stop to them. Success in a police investigation does not always rest on how many arrests are made or how much illegal contraband is seized. Success often lies not in what happens, but in what you prevent from happening.
That is awesome. Just the whole premise, as we're talking about the book Black Klansman, written by Ron Stallworth. He does call it a memoir because that's exactly what it is. And he was the very first black police officer in Colorado Springs, and he infiltrated and actually became a member of the Ku Klux Klan, unbeknownst to David Duke and the rest that he was actually a black person because he sent a stand-in when they did meetings and such. And yeah, this was, I'm right with that. I want to read, this is another passage from the book, is it's important to remember that this was the 70s, a period of tremendous political and civil unrest in our nation. Protest bombings in America were commonplace, especially in hard-hit cities like New York, Chicago, and San Francisco. Nearly a dozen radical underground groups, dimly remembered outfits such as the Weather Underground, the New World Liberation Front, and the Sibyanese Liberation Army, set off hundreds of bombs during the tumultuous decade. So many, in fact, that many people all but accepted them as a daily part of life. And it's funny how I feel like when we draw parallels to things, mm-hmm. I think of the mass shootings that are going on right now.
Yeah.
How we just, they're so commonplace now.
Well, at the end, along with mass shootings, at the end of the Black Klansman film, you and I have discussed where they have some actual footage from Charlottesville, and how devastating and sad and just horrendous that video footage is of, I think someone, I don't know, remember if someone got shot that day. I believe they did, but also someone in a car ran some civilians over.
Oh, somebody was killed. She was killed.
It was bad.
She was hit by the car.
Yeah.
She was hit by the car. And then there are things in this book that I thought were very interesting. I learned things that I didn't know. And one of them was that the Ku Klux Klan was originated in 1869 in Pulaski, Tennessee. And it was basically Confederate soldiers were the founding members of the Ku Klux Klan. And they said that the white robes and hoods were meant to scare former slaves who believed that they might be ghosts.
Yeah, because they had a very strong religious belief in the afterlife. And that I do remember reading about that.
And also a film that you hear of all the time that's often on list of the best 10 films ever made ever, Birth of a Nation. It was made in 1915. D.W. Griffith directed it, and it was based on a novel by a minister named Thomas Dixon Jr. And what it is it's basically the Klan's version of history, and it portrays the Klan as the saviors of the South. And in the movie, they show clips from it. How on earth, I don't care, I don't know how anybody could think that that was one of the best films ever made.
It's just like when communities would go out to, you know, let's go to the Sunday to the park to watch, you know, three people get hung. Yeah, I mean, taking your lunch and your kids, it's just, sometimes you look at how people act in mass society, and sometimes we act because we go with the group and we're not sure, and even though we're questioning things. But thank God there were some people questioning things that, you know, made a change in that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I highly recommend this book. We're going to do our, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we should do our cocktail
recipe. We
need
to do our cocktail. Yes.
After that intense info, we need a cocktail.
I think we were more intense than the book came off as. Wow. Okay. Whew. Okay.
Right.
Time for a cocktail.
All right. So we chose the cocktail we chose for this month is aptly named the Black and White Cocktail. It's a pretty easy cocktail. It's one large coffee ice cube. Not hard to make coffee ice cubes. Just make a pot and throw it in the freezer. 1 ounce of coffee liqueur, such as Kahlua, if you so choose. 1 ounce vodka. 1/2 ounce amaretto, and 1 ounce half and half chilled.
Oh my gosh, that is a delicious cocktail.
Right?
I'm
pretty
say.
That's like maybe a morning, you know? So you're going to
we don't judge when you drink. We have no judging.
Thank you. So you're going to place the coffee ice cube in the glass, and you're going to add the coffee liqueur, vodka, amaretto, and stir the mixture to combine. You're slowly going to pour the half and half over the ice cube, and the half and half will stay layered on top, forming a white layer on top of a black layer.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And then you stir together before drinking.
Yay.
Yay. So you mix the two. So that is our lovely
it up.
Yes. Happy hour cocktail for this.
Well,
for this show.
We want to say thank you so much for listening. I did this last month because this is like a memoir style book, an autobiography, as you will. So I'm giving it a 5. I don't care. I'm not holding back on this one.
1 out of 5?
1 out of 5. I'm giving it a 5.
Yeah, I'd say a 5.
Okay.
Yeah. It was great.
It was really good. Highly recommend.
It was super entertaining. I read it in like 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Black Klansman, a memoir by Ron Stallworth. Give it a read. You'll read it real quick. It's one of those, honestly, if you have a long flight, you could probably get it done with. And we want to let you know.
Yeah, the Get Lit is underwritten by Carbondale Beerworks, a supporter of KDNK and other nonprofit organizations. Beerworks hosts Bingo Night and Music Trivia Night to benefit local causes. The next music trivia for the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program is going to be on March 5th. Mark your calendars for that. For more information, go to CarbondaleBeerworks.com. And I also want to let you know that next month's book, put it on your list, get it checked out at the library, is Asymmetry by Lisa Halliday. It came out in February of 2018, so it's been out for about a year.
Oh, great. That sounds good.
So check it out. Make sure you read it and give us a buzz.
And you can, can I find that on the KDNK website? Are we going to post that kind of stuff?
Yes, I believe so.
Facebook
I will make sure to get on top of that.
All right.
I'll put that on my to-do list.
Well, we want to thank you for listening to Get Lit, your once monthly happy hour book club here at KDNK. Read along with us. Thank you, Erin. Go book.
Absolutely. We'll see you next time.